This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H time. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day, great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, let's do it.
Let's do it. Jalen Reed, I still stepped on you. It's all good. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you had a nice holiday weekend. If you were off yesterday, hope it was relaxing. Appreciate you getting up with us this morning. We're with you till 10 a.m. I am Sean Pendergast. He is Seth Payne. You know, Seth, you and I were talking before the show, as we do every day. And as much as we complain about the Astros and the boredom that has come with many, many of their games this year because they're just not a good offensive team. They're better of late, but they, by and large, for the 53 games so far this year, they're a below-average offensive team, and they're boring. It's far more boring not having them in our lives on a night. For the first time in 17 days, we didn't have an Astros game, and I'm like, what do I do with myself tonight?
Felt empty inside.
Very much so, yeah.
Like, what's it all even about, anyway? And then I watched the Brett Favre documentary, and I really wonder
help.
What it's all about.
It didn't help, yeah.
Oh, the hell man. Is this world coming to?
Yeah, man.
What is this world coming to where the Astros can't find it to play a stinking 18 games in a row and then extend on into however many more?
It's just baseball.
Baseball every night, damn it.
It's just baseball.
You're
going to
load
man.
Manage people but then also want days off?
Yeah, man.
No way.
Yeah.
Not in my America.
Nope.
Get
nope.
the platform ready.
So, so no Stros last night. But yesterday was a holiday show, so a lot of you probably dipped out and did some other things yesterday. So we've, you know, a lot of what we talked... Fortunately, a lot of what we talked about yesterday is still applicable because there was no baseball last night. Mm-hmm. So we got plenty of stuff we can get to with the Stros. So we welcome you all in on a Tuesday morning here.
Astros are still 1.5 games back. Nothing with the Mariners happened yesterday that would have changed it.
So. Okay, so there you go. It's like yesterday never happened. It's like we were in carbon freeze for a day.
Mm-hmm.
And this is actually like kind of a good time to take inventory. I think that once they play tonight, they're a third of the way through the season. That feels like a good tent pole to kind of assess things here. So what have we learned about the Astros? Matt Kawahara actually did this yesterday on the Chronicle, and I was excited to see this. I'm like, oh, I wonder how this matches up with our list that we did of what we learned. Pretty damn close, including the order of it, too. Makes me wonder.
Interesting that the article came out after our show.
Makes me wonder. Maybe someone was listening. I'm joking around. Matt knows what he's doing. He doesn't need us. But I think it does accentuate the point that the things that we learned about this team during that 17-day stretch where we had baseball every day were, like, very poignant. You know, if we're all seeing the same stuff, very poignant. Best thing this team's got going for them right now is the bullpen. And when Matt lists it out, man, it's like, this is some of this team's best work in terms of bringing in no-namers and getting a lot out of them. I mean, they've always been good at it in the bullpen and mostly in the starting rotation. But they've always been able to sort of find guys. I don't remember seeing a group of guys where there's nobody that I can see. There's nobody whose numbers, like, pop out. Like, all right, well, if they got to bring this guy in or that guy in. Like, everybody. Well, Bennett Sousa.
Taylor Skart's not on the roster anymore.
Yeah.
They kind of just they expunged him, and, you know, guys. Sean Dubin comes back from injury, and Sean Dubin hasn't allowed a run since he's been back from injury, 8 2/3 innings.
Yeah.
I think there's a little bit of – he's let some guys on base and what have you, but, I mean, like, that might be the guy that you would have been most concerned about. Brian King has turned into just a seventh-inning mainstay.
Yeah.
You feel really good and solid about Brian King when he goes in. Brian Abreu had the – he blew it on Friday night, but by and large, over the course of the season, he's still a sub-2 ERA.
You know what this does? Like, looking at these paragraphs here with all these names, Bennett Sousa, Steven Okert, Caleb Ort, Sean Dubin, as you mentioned, Brian King, the big one. This is as soon as you said Brian King, seventh-inning mainstay. This group of guys makes the Rafael Montero contract look even dumber 2 years later. You know? Like, They gave Rafael Montero $11 million a year to fill a role that these guys are doing right now. Because they had, when they signed him to that deal, They had Ryan Presley and Brian Abreu on the roster already. Then they end up getting Josh Hader a year into the Montero deal. So you had Presley and Hader and Abreu last year. You had all three of those guys last year. I mean, you're finding guys at minimum salary to give you 2.04 ERAs in the sixth and seventh inning right now.
I'm glad you brought up Montero because I think that might be one of the under-heralded, more curious and like symbolic transactions of that period of the Astros' existence.
Yes.
It's not the same. Jose Abreu, obviously, is going to be the marquee. Holy crap. Boy, did they blow it on this one. But even the Abreu deal, for the most part, when people around baseball saw that deal, they thought, well, boy, he's getting old. I see what they're doing. It makes sense in some respects, but like, eh. A lot of the, eh. With Montero, it wasn't even that. When they got Montero and everybody looked at each other, like, what's going on here exactly? Did they pay Montero?
Right, he became a top 10 paid reliever. And yeah. He wasn't even, and they already had Presley on the roster who was getting paid more than him. It was very strange. And then you throw money at Hader the next year, and it's like, wow, this team sure has invested a lot of money in its bullpen. But you're absolutely right. Like, the Abreu signing, at the time, there were many people that pointed out his power numbers were going down, and they were. Like, there were certainly statistical signs of decline. I didn't look at the advanced stats with him to see if his bat speed had gone down or whatever. But his last year with the White Sox, the power numbers weren't up there. I think he only hit 15 home runs, but the efficiency number, you know, average and OPS were still decent, and you had money to spend. You were well under the competitive balance tax when you went into that offseason, so you had some money to spend. You had a need at first base because you were letting Yuli Gurriel walk. So that one you could at least talk yourself into. I don't know that anyone was saying it was going to be the disaster that it was. You're absolutely right. The Montero one, the day that it got signed, was like, whoa. $11 million for a guy who's, like, at best, your eighth inning guy on this team.
And had come off of his one really impressive season.
He was a throw-in in the Kendall Graveman trade. Like, he wasn't
right.
He wasn't even the guy you targeted.
Looking around, you're like, can I just go back in time and can we retain Charlie Morton instead of, like, Charlie Morton had made a turnaround, but it had been several years, and he had shown that it was going to stick.
Yeah.
This was the 2.37 ERA season out of Montero was by far like the most innings he'd ever pitched.
Wild.
It was his lowest ERA ever. And I think as an organization, you're tempted to think, well, this is just what we do. We've completely transformed him as a pitcher. But especially when it comes to guys that get a higher workload than they've ever had before, like with Christian Javier, man, you gotta wait until that next season and see if it sticks, because that's as much a test as the first actual season where you're pitching all those innings.
Biggest development of the season is the bullpen, I think, easily right now. It's the best thing they have going. The biggest development of the weekend was Altuve. In this article from Matt Kawahara, it talks about how the coaches have been working with Altuve to try to get him to lift the ball more. He's been hitting the ball on the ground way, way too much. 8-for-17 over the weekend, 2 home runs. And I think the big thing, too, he was hitting the ball hard. Half the balls he hit over the weekend had an exit velocity of over 95 miles an hour. So they made some adjustments to, you know, kind of his back leg, how he's loading his hands with his swing, you know, kind of getting into the ball a little bit more. It just goes to show you, he's 35 years old and you still get into bad habits at times.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be constantly tweaking things.
And then just the very simple, hey, try to hit opposite. And that's helped out a lot with him. I mean, that's where one of the most promising things about Altuve hopefully getting out of his slump while they were at home was that, man, you know, Altuve gets tempted by that Crawford boxes and he'll try to pull. You know, he consciously made the decision to go the opposite direction with it. And it worked out in the environment in which it's most tempting.
Yep.
So I think he's walked through the bar and not ordered a shot, Sean. If you were a recovering alcoholic, he was like, all right, this is I passed this test.
Right.
All right. Now I just got to know there's going to be other short left fields out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to walk through more bars that have short left fields.
There is, yeah.
I can't get soused on 29 shots of Jack. Trying to hit a home.
They've got a good old-fashioned in Baltimore. You know, they've got an excellent Manhattan in Manhattan of all places. Yes, yeah. Number three, the others who are getting it done. You know, the other, like Jake Myers right now, Victor Caratini, Mauricio Dubon, Cam Smith. These are all guys who have batting averages of over 300 in whatever the most recent chunk is that they're throwing around
Sean,
on the internet out
I'm,
there.
I'm here to be your stat nerd that figures out a way to make something sound either better or worse than it actually is.
Give it to me.
So, Sean, I know you're big into, ooh, runs. How many runs have you scored? Ooh.
Yeah.
Like, that matters. It's the advanced stats that matter. Because if you look at it, these 17 games, all right, they average 4.1 runs per game.
Mm-hmm.
That would be 21st in the league if that was their season number.
Okay.
So they didn't produce a whole lot of runs.
Yeah.
But,
okay, there's a but coming, yeah.
Weighted runs created plus during the 17-game stretch. They were sixth in the majors.
Okay, now hang on a second.
Yeah.
You might
want to score actual runs, but I got news for you, buddy. If you were playing in a generic ballpark with calm weather conditions against average pitcher, they standardize it for the ballpark and everything.
So they've just had really bad weather and stadium luck.
Bad
is
luck.
What I'm hearing.
I don't know if they factor weather into it or not. They normalize everything.
They do. They take all the variables out of it.
I have a hard time after that series in Tampa where you could pretty much putt the ball and it was going to be a home run.
This is what happens when it's just a man and a pitcher and a ball with no outside elements. They would be the sixth best team in baseball.
In a standard Major League Baseball park.
Cookie cutter
like
Major League Baseball park.
Average left field, average right field.
With all the fans just sitting with their hands folded and staring at the field. Not doing anything.
Like in COVID.
This is what would have been in a COVID field. Any run generating stat where the difference between actuality and the stat nerd galaxy is over half the teams in the league, like 15. Yeah. Sorry, weighted whatever the hell you are. Yeah, you're weighted a little too much. But now that said, of these guys, the miniature circle of trust here: Myers, Caratini, Dubon, Cam Smith. What's their expected COT factor? Expected circle of trust. Do you trust any of these guys that they're going to keep this thing going?
As you have pointed out endlessly, hey, last year in May, Jake Myers had a 924 OPS.
Yeah.
And then for the rest of the season, it was a 562 OPS.
God, it was that bad the rest of the year?
He was a horrible baseball player the rest of the year.
562.
Until we get through Juneteenth, I'd say. Let's wait until Juneteenth.
Juneteenth, okay.
Which is when we'll make our decision on Jake Myers.
On Jake Myers. When I think of Juneteenth, I think of Jake Myers, for sure.
the whitest possible looking dude in sports, white guy
in baseball.
Juneteenth. That guy that you're like, oh yeah, that kid grew up in a cul-de-sac.
For sure.
Yeah.
for sure.
On Juneteenth, we will decide whether or not Jake Myers is worthy.
Sounds good. All right, that's the date. We'll do a circle of trust on Juneteenth. All right, good summary by Matt Kawahara on the Chronicle. Good stuff. All right, and the Astros 10-7 in those 17 games, 1.5
games. You know
what
Kawahara does? Kawahara, he stands the whole time during the game.
Does he?
I think he's one of these psychotically healthy people that just are, you know, get 40,000 steps a day.
Okay.
He's constantly probably eats the exact same thing every day. It's got a lot of greens in it.
What is standing for 3 hours burn? What's that burn, like 11 extra calories?
It's
or
not
something?
About a matter of burning calories. It's kind of just a matter of keeping all your systems up and running properly.
Gotcha.
Yeah, being sedentary. The number of hours you sit per day is highly correlated to dying younger. So, it's way better to stand all day than to sit all day.
That's smart, man. That's smart. All right, you and I both watched this Brett Favre documentary yesterday. This, not a great look for Brett Favre at all. I've got the power rankings of the five biggest scumbags in this documentary. There were a handful of them. I've got my power ranking. I want to see if it matches up with Seth's. The final Favre Doc scumbag power rankings coming up. We got some Texans and some Astros. Plenty of stuff to get to on the show today as well. Stay there. All right.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
All right, so Seth and I went and did the work for you. If you're somebody who's into sports documentaries and as they come out, and there's more now than ever. You can find a documentary a day if you want to.
There's money in them thar hills, they realize.
100%. 100%. Yeah. So the Brett Favre documentary, Fall of Favre, came out over the weekend, and it's on Netflix. It's 1 hour and 3 minutes long. It is a quick and very easy watch, I would say. And I would say, Seth, overall, and we're going to go into the details here. I've got my scumbag power rankings from this deal. I would say overall, given that it's only 1 hour, I would recommend it. If you're, you know, if you're into Brett Favre, if you're a football fan, it's worth a watch.
My big test with a lot of these is, okay, is this just a rehashing of a bunch of stuff I already know?
Yeah.
And by and large, a lot of this was rehashing stuff you already knew. But as it laid out the Jen Sturger situation, the woman that worked for the New York Jets that Brett Favre was very persistent with in pursuing, there were some things that I had either forgotten or didn't know at all,
yeah,
that were kind of alarming. And the way the documentary lays it out, at least it's pretty damning.
Yes. You know? Yeah.
I don't think it's not really in contention about whether he did or didn't do anything now. It's more you can look back on it with some perspective.
Yeah, no, there's nothing alleged about his behavior. Like, it's all, I mean, yeah, there's voicemail messages. Like, he didn't run from the fact that it was his unit on that picture that got sent to her and whatnot.
Yeah.
And they did a good job in the first 10 or 15 minutes of laying out just exactly how entitled Brett Favre became in Green Bay, because, one, they hadn't had success as a franchise in nearly 30 years. Like, they,
right,
since Super Bowl II, they made the playoffs between Super Bowl II and the early 90s. They made the playoffs twice. That's it.
Yeah,
that was a bad franchise.
Yeah, kids wouldn't realize that, you know, if you were born 30 years or less ago, that there was a long stretch of the Packers just made kind of a joke, you know,
yes,
just a faint and distant memory of what they once were.
2 10-win seasons in a 24-season period. They were bad. They were awful. They were the Cleveland Browns, basically. I would say like two-thirds of this doc, two-thirds to, it felt like 75%. It felt like a majority of it was the Jen Sturger saga. The girl,
the Jen Sturger, yeah, with a good dose of the welfare fraud as,
yeah,
well.
Yeah, that was the welfare fraud was sort of the dessert to
the
Jen Sturger. Yeah, sorry, alleged appetizer. Boy, a lot of smoke, though. A lot of smoke.
We have to be careful about it because Brett Favre will come after if you don't say alleged.
Very,
you know,
litigious.
As Pat McAfee found out.
The Jen Sturger, right. Yeah, McAfee and a few others. Yeah, so the Jen Sturger part, I thought the interesting things about this were,
well, and just to lay it all out, yeah, just for a lot of people that might not remember, yeah, the Jen Sturger was an employee, worked for the Jets, did stadium interviews, stuff like that, yeah, attractive young woman, and Brett Favre just started sending her text messages over and over again, and then ultimately a picture of his, an inappropriate picture.
Inappropriate picture, yeah, yeah. And her claim to fame, like her rise to fame started with her popping up on a shot at a Florida. She went to Florida State and she's in a bikini top at the game cheering. The camera catches her. Brent Musburger mentions her and she's, yeah, off to the races after that. So she worked for SI.com. She went viral. She posed for Maxim and Playboy. I thought the funny thing was, Seth, was how in the, they went back and played some footage of 2007 of some shows like Entertainment Tonight and stuff like that. Like, she has 4,000 followers on Facebook.
She maxed out her Facebook. Like, whoa, yeah.
That was a big deal.
Yeah, the first time Favre reached out to her, I think it was on MySpace.
It was a burner MySpace account.
Yeah,
So that's how long ago this was. The other thing was, man, the Jets, what a bleep show that place was. In terms of handling the harassment, in terms of her job description, she would say she'd show up at the stadium with really no rundown from anybody. Just show up and do whatever you want. Yeah.
Which I actually, like, on the social media side of things, that was when everything was brand new and nobody knew what the hell was. Yeah. So I think they were throwing stuff against the wall. Yeah. That side of it I get.
Yeah.
Her making multiple complaints and the Jets doing absolutely nothing about
it.
Not even addressing the issue. Yeah. Somebody had given her personal number to Brett Favre.
Yeah.
You know, somebody from the organization gave him her phone number.
Yeah.
And the thing that I didn't realize the entire time, like, to lay it all out, is that they never actually had even met. Favre just started sending these texts out of the blue, and she thought she was getting catfished at first.
Yeah.
And he just kept at it.
Then he left a voicemail, and she said, unless this is a Brett Favre impersonator, a really good impersonator, yeah, this is definitely him that's harassing me right now.
Yeah.
She would, or he... They also interviewed this fellow by the name of Tim Andre, who was assigned to her on game days to sort of be her quasi-security on game days. And he, again, the Jets, he's like, I have no background in security. They just handed me to her, and I'm walking around with her. He said that Favre would come down the tunnel to run onto the field before games and stare her down. And he was like, dude, you got a ball game to go play right now. Like, you could tell that, you could see the obsession in his eyes just running onto the field and catching a glimpse of her.
And the weird, weird thing about it is that she looks a lot like his wife.
It paints
a weird picture of just him being in New York all alone. But then just persistently, propositioning her and everything, and then sending an inappropriate picture. Like, that's where it really just goes into, DEFCON 1.
Yes.
Is without still ever having met her or talked to her or anything, just things like, oh, this is how I get her attention this time.
Yeah.
This
good job,
like, relatively unimpressive, not one way or the other about it, just my bland and generic, WRC plus of 100, inappropriate picture.
His
expected batting average in any given ballpark, probably about average.
Yes. His wiener plus was 100. Yeah. That's all. I thought it was interesting, too. They talked about Brett Favre's dad a little bit in this documentary, who apparently was very overbearing. He was a coach growing up.
Never gave him a compliment, that type of stuff. Old school.
Old school stuff. But they said in this documentary, Brett Favre, who already lived a pretty wild lifestyle when his dad was alive, that when his dad died, the guardrails were kind of removed and it got worse. And I thought I found that interesting because this is the third documentary I can think of in the last few years where that's a huge thing. Tiger Woods, Aaron Hernandez, and Brett Favre. What do they have in common? But it's true. It's a big theme of all three of their stories.
I don't know if that part of it didn't. I didn't buy that because he had his painkiller addiction in 94 through 97.
Yeah.
His dad died in 2003.
Yeah.
And by the way, the Green Bay media members interviewed in this piece would have it that Brett Favre was always living like Brett Favre.
Yeah.
I think the biggest difference was he got outside of Green Bay and in an area where, like, he wasn't going to get away with anything and everything.
Yeah.
And the guardrail that he lost in actuality was probably just that he left Green Bay.
Yep.
And all of a sudden he was a big fish in a huge pond as opposed to being a big fish in a tiny little smallest market size in the NFL pond.
Real quick, before I get to the scumbag power rankings of this documentary, because they're plentiful. We do get a text from somebody who's a younger listener. Like, I had no idea they were this bad, the Packers, ever.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because they've been good. They've been good and relevant since Favre got there in 1992. I think they must be looking up the numbers. They were horrible. Oh.
The one other thing about how badly the Jets handled it.
Yeah, yeah.
They had two massage therapists. This is sounding familiar to anybody. Two massage therapists. Now, these massage therapists worked for the Jets.
Yeah.
These two massage therapists complained about Brett Favre being inappropriate. The massage therapists were fired. And as far as we can tell, it was never brought up to Brett Favre. So this was the old school, just star quarterback is going to get away with anything and anything. This is the organization. For those things that they tried to say about the Texans, where they tried to link him to the Houstonian because of the Texans, etc.
That was
BS.
Mm-hmm.
No, this was the team firing two employees who made complaints about Brett Favre.
Yeah, yeah. It makes you wonder what all he got away with in Green Bay. These were the things he was attempting to get away with in New York. Like, what's the mountain of things that he was able to steer clear of getting punished for in Green Bay? Not even punished for by the team, but maybe even just like punished for, like, out and about socially, like, you know. Yeah. Just all right, so here's my power rankings, the scumbag power rankings. Number five, Prevacus. Am I pronouncing that right?
I think it's Prevacus.
Prevacus, okay. The concussion cure-all drug that Favre was an investor in that eventually ran out of money, so allegedly they had to take some of that welfare cheddar from Mississippi to kind of keep the dream alive, I guess.
That was one of the big lump sums of
possibly illegal
funds on behalf of Brett Favre. I think that was $2 million, right?
I think the volleyball facility was $1.1 million, and I think Prevacus might have been.
It was $1.1 million to Brett Favre personally for appearances.
Is that what it was? Okay, yeah.
He never made.
I lost track of all the money.
No, I think it was a bigger It was a bigger chunk to the volleyball team. It was multi-millions.
Because they're building.
Yeah, so they had this. By the way, Sean, Prevacus also got tagged for overstating the benefit of the drug. If that's a surprise to you or
say.
Not. Yeah. Yeah, that was all part of it, too. It was like they overstated just how magical this concussion drug was.
So that's number five, Prevacus. Number four, the New York Jets. And I think we've outlined it pretty well here. Nice work environment, Johnson family. Holy crap. Woman goes and complains about Brett Favre harassing her. Her contract does not get renewed the following year. Massage therapist, as you just outlined, Seth, fired when they complained about Brett Favre.
Just a whiz bang job there, PR, HR department.
Yeah, everything you could think of about the Jets. Number three, Irv Favre, Brett's dad, sounds like kind of an a-hole. Sorry, I don't mean to speak ill of the dead, but he's been dead for a long time, and this documentary does not do him any favors. Peter King was saying that he would talk to Irv Favre after games, and Favre could have gone 27 for 35 for 325 yards, three touchdowns and an interception. I think it was Peter King. It was either Peter King or Bill Michaels, the Green Bay commentary guy. And Favre could put up all these numbers, but the one interception, Irv would be like, yeah, can't believe he didn't see that safety back there on that interception.
Yeah, nothing's ever good enough. It came off kind of sounding like, I don't know, like Favre had this really tough taskmaster father who was just, you know, never really showing a lot of appreciation for him or anything like that.
Yep.
And yet at the same time, I don't think it had the effect on, trying to paint him like some Tiger Woods type of character where it was when his father died or his father died that everything went off the rails.
Yeah.
Favre, the reason he didn't get drafted in the first round, the reason Atlanta wanted to trade him was that he was always off the rails.
Yeah.
There was never it wasn't like he was just kind of off the rails and that he got away with being off the rails for a long time before it finally just kind of folded over on top of itself.
All right, number two, AJ DeLorio, the editor of Deadspin back in the day, who basically took an off the record conversation he was having with Jen Sturger about the Brett Favre situation, about the wiener pick, and said, oh, I'm running with this. I'm going to do this story. And she's like, please don't. And he's like, nope, I'm going to go do this story. And that's what blew the lid off of the whole Favre thing. Like it was a very, very sensational story. Like,
well, because people were wondering, it came out 3 years after the fact.
Yeah.
And so immediately, you know, people started saying that Jen Sturger's got an agenda or whatever. It ended up destroying her career.
Yes.
You know, or at the very least, I'm guessing it was probably really hard for her to work while just getting constantly attacked online and everything.
Yep.
But she, like, the way she tells it, and it seems to be backed up by DeLorio, is that she was kind of having a casual conversation with him via email or chat, and she just thought it would be off the record. That's where him not being an actual journalist, but just being kind of a whatever the hell Deadspin was going to run with it. As soon as he got a sniff of it, she asked him not to use it, and he said, nope, I'm going with it.
If you're wondering why were the two of them talking, she was actually starting to do work for Deadspin at the time.
Yeah,
she had written an article that got huge hits, a freelance article, and so Deadspin had hired her at the time, and then DeLorio runs with that. He's number two. Number one is Brett Favre in a landslide. And obviously, the documentary's about him. He didn't accept an interview for the documentary. There were a lot of people on his side of things that said no to talking about this thing. But using a burner MySpace page to hit Jen Sturger up, turns out he, as Seth mentioned, harassed massage therapists, allegedly.
Yeah.
Just how creepy...
Allegedly misappropriated funds from Mississippi's welfare funds. That's still ongoing, so it's still alleged. But there are, was it 11 people that have been found guilty?
There's like in the
cloud of people around Brett Favre there.
There's like six that have gone to prison, something like that. And Favre has managed to avoid it. This is my easiest way to sum this up, the creepiness of Brett Favre in this thing, is that you could remove the whole picture out of the whole thing, like that whole, like him texting a picture of his junk to her.
Yeah.
You could remove that. You could, like, that could never have happened. And it still is 1,000% creepy on his part, the stuff he was doing. Hitting her up on MySpace, leaving voicemail messages, inviting her to his hotel. They'd never met. Inviting her to his hotel when they'd never met before. Like, that is some creepy stuff. And then you add the picture on top of it.
It is amazing, though, too, because now you're 20 years removed from this.
Yeah.
What year was the actual?
He was with the Jets in 2008.
Okay. So, 17 years removed from this. And It's like NFL teams have changed a lot. Obviously the Jets, it looks like they didn't even have an HR department.
Right.
And sports teams right. are relatively small organizations. You'd be amazed how many of them are very much run just like a mom and pop shop.
Yeah.
Despite being a $1 billion entity.
Yep.
That part of it, at least it would be handled, I think, a lot differently. Now, having said that, when it's a star quarterback, I don't know. Everything's a lot of things get bent for the starting quarterback.
Text message: the dead can't hear you. You're safe, Sean. Thank you. I appreciate that, texter. Yeah,
yeah.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Headlines coming up next. Let's circle back. Astros big stretch coming up here. Got to make hay on this homestand here. They got 6 games coming up at home. NBA playoffs last night. Somebody allowed back into the game tonight in the NBA playoffs that we'll get to in headlines as well. We'll do all that coming up next.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
All right, let's get to it. Headlines. The Astros back at it today, tonight, I should say, after a day off yesterday. Welcome you in here if you're just getting in your car. Payne and Pendergast on a Tuesday. Hunter Brown on the mound tonight. Lance McCullers on the mound tomorrow for a 2-game set against the A's. So that's good theater for you right there. If you're looking to go out to the yard, you get a Hunter Brown start. That's probably one of the biggest must-watch things in Houston sports right now. And then Lance McCullers, I would say maybe Lance McCullers up there for similar reasons in that he's a starting pitcher with different expectations. We're still waiting for Lance to give us that elusive 5-inning start. Ooh. Maybe it's tomorrow, Seth. Maybe tomorrow's the big day. We'll see. But this is the start of a stretch of 25 games here. We'll talk about this a little bit more later on in the show. But 25 games here where they're playing, a majority of them are against bottom feeders. A majority of the games they've got coming up in the next month are against teams that are consensus bottom 8 to 10 type teams in Major League Baseball, like including the A's, who are a bottom 5 team in baseball right now.
Yeah,
so this is a good opportunity.
And then Hunter Brown, I think the thing I'm most excited about is to just see how much of an assassin he is tonight.
After that
disappointing game in Tampa, I would expect to see him hyper focused and very aggressive and angry.
Yes.
Yep. I'd put the over under on, well, 7 innings. I'd say 7 tonight? And a third innings.
7 and a third. Okay.
I think he's going to go 8. I think he's going 8, Sean. I think he's just going to come out and deal. Yes.
He only went 5 last time, but that was in that bandbox in Tampa Bay. And I think you're right. Like, he's going to want to bounce back from that. Look, Hunter Brown, if he keeps pitching the way he's been over the aggregate of the season, is going to start the All-Star game. It's either going to be him or Skuball from the Detroit Tigers, one of the two. But he's making the All-Star team. I think if he has another June like he had May and April, he's making the All-Star team, Hunter Brown. And I think he's in that conversation to possibly start it. So, yeah, get a nice bounce back tonight, please. NBA playoffs last night. OKC takes a 3-1 lead over Minnesota, 128-126, the final score in Minnesota. So it would appear that it's just a matter of time before we get the Oklahoma City Thunder in the NBA Finals. It's interesting, man. There's been so much talk in this NBA playoffs of the lack of a super team.
Yeah.
The lack, and I think when people are defining super team, they're talking about teams that have like 2 or 3 all-stars on it that are big names. The Oklahoma City Thunder have a couple of all-stars on their team, but they're emerging names. The biggest one is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who's the now reigning MVP of the league. He had 40 points last night. 40 points, 10 assists, 9 rebounds. Jalen Williams had a career playoff high of 34 points. He was really good last night. That's probably the scary thing, Seth, is all this talk of, well, there's no dynasty in this playoffs. Like, no, there might be. This is a team whose best players are all in their early mid-20s, and they won 68 games this year.
And Jalen Williams is a guy that has not been as impressive in the postseason. He was really bad last year when they were eliminated by Dallas in the playoffs. and he goes off last night. I think that's maybe a little bit of a dose of, all right, let's give Jalen Green some time. Let's give him a little bit of time. It takes a while for some guys to adjust to the playoffs.
Yep. So, yeah, Williams was really good last night. 13 of 24, 6 of 9 from 3. So OKC will try to close them out at home. We're back at it tonight with the Pacers and the Knicks. The Pacers lead that series 2-1, but it's one of those strange situations where just a big missed opportunity for the Pacers to really put that series away at home in game 3, and you wonder if there's a spillover effect into game 4 with the way they're up 20 in the second quarter of that game. They're up 10 going into the fourth quarter, and the Knicks are able to keep their playoff hopes alive, very much alive, if they're able to win tonight. The big story with this series, Seth, is that Tyrese Halliburton's dad, John Halliburton, for the first time in 8 playoff games, is allowed in the arena again after the closeout game against Milwaukee, where he went on the court after the game was over and taunted Giannis Antetokounmpo. He had been asked to stay away from Pacers games. He's now allowed back in, but he's in a suite. He's not allowed near the court anymore.
He's wearing a Hannibal Lecter outfit.
Yes,
I'm told he's going
to
have
tied to a dolly.
Yeah,
yep, with the cage on his face there,
and sunglasses.
Yep,
so that people can't even see him glaring at people.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. In a suite, stood up on a dolly in a suite. He's still not allowed at road games. This is one of the funniest things to me. Like the slow, gradual allowing of spectator rights again to Tyrese Halliburton's dad, who fully takes ownership of the fact that he messed up. That's the other funny part. He's like, yeah, I probably shouldn't have done that with Giannis taunting him.
The decision,
whatnot.
So you might ask, wait, who's banning him from the games? The decision was made by the Pacers front office. So it's the Pacers themselves. This isn't the NBA banning him. So the Pacers have... This is weird. So the Pacers have banned him from road games, but not their home games. I don't know. I feel like he needs to test this. Become as big a distraction as possible to his son.
Put him down next to the court
during a playoff
again.
Run. Yeah, like, wait a second. You have no actual authority over me on the road, do you? This is the Pacers, just their random. It's their suggestion for what they'd like him to do.
He should buy a ticket. He should buy a ticket. Like, go on Game Time or go on StubHub or whatever and buy a ticket down near the
I'll fight for John Halliburton.
Yes.
I'll take this to the Supreme Court.
Hashtag fight for John Halliburton. Yes. All right, so that's that story. Other stories around the world of sports. Aaron Rodgers discussed retiring as a Packer. We'll hear from Aaron Rodgers in the Pettycast. He went after some Bears fans, trolled them a little bit. We'll hear from him in the Pettycast at 8 o'clock. He discussed retiring as a Packer on one of those one-day contracts, Seth. The funny thing is, he would only do it, classic Aaron Rodgers, he's only going to do it under one condition, that the Packers ask him to retire as a Packer. You know?
Right, yeah. I'm not going to go there groveling on my knees.
Right. They have to ask me to retire.
That might fall into the bucket of things that I can appreciate, but that might not say out. I might not say it out loud, I guess. I think most people would probably feel that way. Like, oh, I'm not going to go begging to go retire as a Packer.
I agree with you. This is what I thought was weird about it.
Yeah,
is he explicitly said that's the one condition in which he would accept it.
Yeah,
like, what in which of these other times where it's been done has it been? Did Jerry Rice approach the 49ers and say, hey, I'd like to sign a one-day contract?
I know of some instances where it's been done, yeah.
Oh, where they've approached the team. And,
yeah, especially if there's a PR person involved or something.
Okay.
You know, they're like, hey, we'd like to retire. And
fair enough.
Like to retire.
I take back everything I said in the last 45 seconds. You're right. Yep, you're right. Okay, well, that's a little bit more, that makes a little bit more sense.
I've seen it done in instances where you're kind of like,
that guy?
Does this deserve a ceremony? And again, I've got the feel the team's kind of like, hey, everybody, we called you here to celebrate the career of this guy.
Yeah.
Who was on the team for a while.
Yeah. So there's that. Caitlin Clark will miss 2 weeks with a quad strain. So let the with and without Caitlin Clark TV ratings comparisons commence. You know that's what I'm here
Bregman,
for. Yeah.
Kindred spirits
Her
on
Bregman,
this. Missing serious time with a quad strain.
Quad, yeah. Hurts 2 weeks. Yeah, Bregman, we don't know yet. It seems pretty serious. And Jordan Hudson, Bill Belichick's girlfriend, posted about Pablo Torre and quickly deleted about his findings that we discussed yesterday. in his podcast about where the Airbnb was, where the shirtless Belichick ring cam popped up. She said that Pablo's findings have been nothing short of factually incorrect, slanderous, defamatory, and targeted. Can y'all please stop giving credibility to this reporter with the air quotes around it? Florio thinks that that means that Hudson might be lawyering up sometime soon.
I think Jordacek could be very litigious.
Jordacek.
That's what the cute couple name is going to be for this cute power couple. Jordacek.
Yeah. Jordacek. I like
Jordacek.
It. Yeah.
Jordacek. Yeah.
Jordacek.
I think Jordacek could come out guns a-blazing on this. Ooh, and you might say, well, Belichick's never been like that before. Yeah, he's never been dating a 24-year-old weirdo before either. Yeah.
Dude, the depositions on a Belichick relationship with a 24-year-old, assuming people are being truthful, there could be some good stuff in there.
It's tough with Pablo. It would be an intimidation tactic. I mean, for anything Pablo Torre has done, he's framed it the right way. It's like he's acting as a reporter. And when you're a public personality, as Jordacek will find out or knows already, it's not as easy to claim slander.
Defamation,
against a reporter.
Yeah,
as long as
the
reporter isn't specifically like trying to do you harm for that reason. Yeah.
Quick point on the text page. It sounds like the NBA may have told the Pacers, if you don't do something, we will. About John Halliburton?
Yeah.
That could be. That's a possibility. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you here on a Tuesday. Okay. Circling over to the Texans. Where is Nico Collins on the NFL odds board of receivers most likely to crack 1,250 yards of receiving? Where is Nico Collins being viewed coming into this season, given the injuries last year, but the production when he was on the field? We'll dig into that and a whole lot more in the 7 o'clock hour coming up next.